Hello and welcome to the program, UFO Warning. In this episode, we're looking at the origins of OSAP. That's correct, the origins of OSAP. Now that acronym is AAWSAP. It stands for Advanced Aerospace Weapon System Applications Program. Of course, this program was the genesis for the notion of ATIP. A lot of questions whether ATIP was even a actual program or merely the nickname given to it by Harry Reid and a figment of Louis Elizondo's imagination. But ASIP was the one that was originally funded back in 2008, and this has somehow morphed into this notion of ATIP, or Advanced Aerospace Threat Identification Program. Now, that whole situation gave birth to a bunch of UFO phenomena celebrities like Louis Elizondo, Christopher Mellon, Hal Puttock, others that came out of this program, who are now making the rounds at these UFO conferences as the arbiters of truth, telling us, you know, what's going on. We have Tom DeLonge sitting up there telling us that he's seen things that nobody else is, you know, in the UFO community has seen, and, you know, just depend upon him to tell us what to do next. I find that kind of offensive myself. Normally, when it comes to UFO reports and sightings and that, I'd like to take an open mind, and usually I lean toward being a believer more than a non-believer in pretty much any UFO encounter that's reported to me. And some people say, you know, I'm not critical enough. In this situation, I find myself leaning toward the debunker. Well, I wouldn't even say debunker side. I would just say I find myself being more critical, more prone not to believe what we're being told. It almost seems like a lot of these stories about ATIP have been incubated in the deep state. The videos released clandestinely through unknown players, depending on parking lot, those videos basically monetized and exploited by organizations like Academy of the Stars. So the whole thing seems convoluted. It seems like I see a lot of deception. I see a lot of centralization of the knowledge where things aren't being open sourced. It's the exact opposite of open sourcing. Given all that, I think it's important that we take a look at where this whole story began at and what the truth actually is. And that really hasn't been done enough. There's been some news recently, I think on a podcast, where people were talking about Louis Elizondo and his family history. You could be getting into a gray area there where you're getting close to doxing somebody. I don't know. It brought up a lot of, I think, kind of negative infighting. But at the same time, I think it's okay to examine the statements people make when they make themselves a public figure and they engage in a commercial activity surrounding their story. I think it's okay to go ahead and examine that story and decide if we believe it or we don't believe it, or we believe parts of it but not other parts. And so without being too critical or too hard on any of the players, I think it's important to take a look at some of these facts. And there's no way you can cover this all in one podcast. So I found this article here from metabunk.org. Now, typically, you know, I'm not really excited about citing stuff from titles with bunk in the title. But if we're ever going to be taken seriously, or if we're ever going to convince the public to have an open mind toward UFOs, I think we have to do critical thinking ourselves first. Now, this article says it's by NorCal Dave, senior member. The title says, "The Origins of ASWAP," that's AAWSAP, just like we just said. The date's June 21st, 2022. It says, where did the AAWSAP files come from, and where did ASWAP originate? And then he says, for the answer, I broke down and paid the $9.98 for the Kindle version of Skinwalkers at the Pentagon by Dr. James Lacazzi, Colm Kellner, and George Knapp. I think I would have subtitled it, "How Some Dead Animals Brought Us the Tic Tac and Squandered $22 Million of Taxpayer Money." So you can see this individual is not really happy about what he found. And this is a problem, I think, that when you have these UFO stories are percolated up out of the deep state and are promoted by deep state actors, people who have been lifelong employees of the Pentagon or intelligence agencies, and they retire and then monetize their job title basically by presenting themselves as experts at UFO conferences, and then tell stories that are convoluted, and sometimes parts of them can't be proven, or sometimes are verifiably false. When that happens, and there's so much smoke, the skeptics are armed. Then they can come out and say, well, it's all false, it's all true, it's all just a big joke. And that's not helpful to anybody. Anyway, it goes on, it says, it's a long post, and I'm going to need a G&T after this, and might get moved to ramble, blah, blah, blah. And then he says, so then he goes on with the article, he says, here's a quick version for those in a hurry. He begins by saying, what one gets is the longtime UFO paranormal journalist and Coast to Coast AM regular, George Knapp, is the godfather of AAWSAP. In a nutshell, he hyped up some dubious accounts of strange happenings and cattle mutilations on the Sherman Ranch in Utah to the point that UFO paranormal enthusiast millionaire Robert Bigelow bought in. Now, you know, I'm not sure about that, because Robert Bigelow, I think, shows that he has a long interest in paranormal type stuff. I don't think he had to be convinced by George Knapp to have an interest in this. And as that video points out that I've linked to on Buy Me a Coffee, Robert Bigelow was a longtime contributor to Harry Reid, a now deceased powerful senator from Nevada. And it looks like Bigelow, along with the original person in charge of OSAP, were the ones that really kind of got together with Reid, sort of just talked this over and had this idea to investigate this stuff. It seems like Harry Reid himself had an interest in the paranormal. Robert Bigelow had an interest in the paranormal. They found a few other experts in the field that had an interest in the paranormal, but they knew that the federal government probably was not going to fund something like that straight up, because who wants to say, I'm the one that gave $22 million so that these guys could go out to Skinwalker Ranch and research ghosts? It looks like, and as it's pointed out in the video, that what really happened was they needed a way to kind of, to more or less disguise that and present this as, hey, we're checking out these strange intrusions to make sure it's not the Russians or the Chinese invading our airspace. That would be a lot easier to get funding for that kind of a research than to get funding for research of all sorts of paranormal anomaly at Skinwalker Ranch. Now it goes on, it says, Bigelow, using his own money, set up the National Institute for Discovery Science, NIDS, headed by Colm Kelleher, to investigate what would come to be called Skinwalker Ranch for 8 years. Now, you've probably heard of NIDS before. This comes up in a lot of the paranormal research stuff. And so I think it's important to know the players behind the research that's happening, because they might have their own agenda. I'm not trying to disparage Robert Bigelow or anything like that. I'm just saying this is where it starts at. Afterwards, Kellner and Knapp wrote a book. DIA employee James Lacazzi read the book, traveled to the ranch where he met Bigelow, and had a minor vision. With the help of Nevada Senator Reid, whom had been introduced to Bigelow by Knapp many years before, Lacazzi crafted a government contract to look at UFOs, strange stuff, and Skinwalker Ranch, all under the guise of future aerospace technologies and threats. Now, once again, if you watch that video, you'll see the short clip there where Lacazzi's being interviewed and basically says, we named this program what we named it so that people wouldn't freak out about the fact that we were researching the paranormal and therefore lose our funding. Now, as I said, Robert Bigelow seems to have had a long-term relationship with Harry Reid as far as funding his program. That's also gone into that he was a political donor to Harry Reid. Then it says the contract was written so that only Lacazzi could be in charge of it. Bigelow's BASS company was the sole bidder and was awarded the contract, so that Lekarsky was in charge of funneling $22 million to Bigelow's company, which was run by Kellner. At least some of this money was used to send Kellner back to Skinwalker Ranch, now with taxpayer dollars. So you see, we have Bigelow. He's a major player here because he's got the NIDS company, which he runs, and now he's using a second company, his BAAS company, to basically funnel money into the Skinwalker Ranch investigation. Now, you can make up your own mind whether that's ethical or unethical, but it looks like it's all been done, you know, legally. It says many people from Knapp's circle of UFO paranormal researchers, such as Hal Puthoff and Kit Green, got a little taste as they helped provide what could become the DIRD files. BAASS also rents MUFON database and may have used some of their field investigators. That might present a little bit of a conflict of interest here, because it seems like, you know, Bigelow's got his hands on the government money, and now they're just kind of spreading it around a little bit. Hal Puthoff, he's an interesting guy, and Kit Green, we'll talk about them maybe in another podcast, but you can really begin to see this nucleus of players that are involved in this thing right from the onset. It says Lekarsky, now remember, he was one that was the first director of this OSAP, was the originator and the only person ever in control of OSAP. So that kind of rules out Louis Elizondo from the start. Remember, OSAP, that was a funded program, and as I point out in the video, that ATIP was just a nickname for that program. It was a way for, I think they explained later, for them to kind of obfuscate what was obviously going on there. So how Elizondo considers himself to be the original, or the, you know, the guy on this, I just don't get that. It says there was no formal ATIP, no formal ATIP. And that's what they said in the video, that this name ATIP, that never actually existed as far as a legally created department. That's just a made-up nickname. That acronym was created solely as a ruse to be used in a letter that got circulated at the DOD as to hide AAWSAP. Whether or not people like Chris Malone or Louis Elizondo use the term ATIP to describe their unfunded and unofficial UFO research is unclear. It appears that the New York Times article of 2017 got a hold of the ATIP name and applied it to what was really AAWSAP, or OSAP. Once in the public sphere, it might have been used accordingly. After funding dried up, Lekarsky eventually retired, and as before, he now joined Kellner and Knapp in writing a book about it. So basically what they're saying is the same thing that was said in the video, that Louis Elizondo, while he may have been seems to have been employed by the Department of Defense, had no official capacity running a UFO research department. He says he did it in this unofficial capacity. Basically, I guess, what does that mean? I looked for UFOs in my spare time? That's what they were saying. So this really changes the narrative from that point. When you have someone like Elizondo who's going around at these UFO conferences presenting himself as this expert, this former DOD employee who actually was in charge of this UFO research department, that presents him as an expert witness. He can make a lot of money doing these conferences and book signings or whatnot, appearing on the History Channel or Discovery or wherever, and that's great. But we need to be clear about what department were you in charge of. If there was never an actual department that was named ATIP, then we should know that. If the actual department's name was, you know, the acronym was OSAP, then just tell us that, so we know, you know, who was in charge of the department, who got the paycheck for running it, and how long was it actually in business. Now, it goes on, it says, of the $22 million, only $350,000 is accounted for, as it went to MUFON and appears on their tax filings. This was for the use of their UFO database and possibly some training of field investigators, or the use of MUFON investigators. It's a little unclear. Yeah, that gets a little bit sketchy to me. I don't know, especially, you know, when it's people who have cited these things or individual experiencers who actually make their reports to MUFON in good faith. You know, I'm a little bit skeptical about this involvement, you know, of MUFON with the federal government. I guess, like I said, there's nothing illegal about it. It just seems weird to me. In the end, AAWSAP produced the 1,500 pages that this thread is about, along with mountains of reports about different encounters. It's unclear, though, how many of the reports were actually generated by BAASS employees and subcontractors for AAWSAP, or just culled and rehashed from MUFON and other databases. Well, exactly. If they're just reporting UFO encounters, you know, we do this on this podcast. Lots of people, anybody can go on the MUFON website. I think that there might be a small fee to get into the detailed accounts, but there's plenty of free stuff on there. I mean, they do a great service to the community as far as correlating these reports. It says, as this is MetaBunk, I will provide a timeline below using quotes from the book for those that want to see what was actually in it. And then it says, important notes, I can't stress this enough, but after reading through this book, it's important to remember a few key ideas about where the authors are coming from. Then it says, cattle and other animals mutilated by unknown entities, intelligently guided orbs, silent black triangular aircraft, poltergeists, seven-foot-tall wolf creatures, government agents in black suits, and all the other high strangeness that reportedly occurs at Skinwalker Ranch and elsewhere is prima facie that these things happen as described is a given fact. There is no notion of mundane or terrestrial explanation for any of these encounters, rather an attempt to understand the underlying phenomena. Cattle don't just die and get picked over with scavengers. They are dissected by otherworldly entities. Well, here's the problem. When they try to just, I think, throw the kitchen sink at the UFO phenomena, you're going to get criticism like this. They could have went through and maybe picked out three or four phenomena and went into detail explaining what makes them strange. Like, for instance, with the cattle mutilation, why are they bloodless? Why is there no blood spilt on the ground? You know, why is it that scavengers don't pick over them? You see this fellow here, he's just read the book and he's just automatically assumed that scavengers are the reason that cattle mutilations look the way they do. Obviously, to me, the report didn't specify the main things about cattle mutilations that make them anomalies. As far as, you know, accounts of wolf creatures and orbs and this sort of thing, all you can do is just separate the eyewitness evidence or the eyewitness reports from physical evidence. So see, they're completely different things than, say, a cattle mutilation where you have this actual cattle that's been dissected where there should be 10 gallons of blood spilled on the ground and there's not a single drop. It's a big difference. They're not really sorting through the evidence. It's almost like, here's $22 million, just go out and throw the kitchen sink at it. That's not going to work, and it's not going to convince anybody about the whole notion of paranormal activity. It goes on, it says, this book is not a piece by a research skeptic like Brian Dunning or somebody at the Skeptical Inquirer, blah, blah, blah. No, it's not. The book is just about, it's kind of just a testimony of what they did from their perspective. So they're not going to be particularly critical of themselves. I think we should understand this. Now, he gets into the timeline, which is a little more important here. It says, 1995, wealthy hotelier and UFO enthusiast Robert Bigelow founds the National Institute of Discovery Science, known as NIDS, with the purpose of studying strange things and anomalies. And then it says, the National Institute for Discovery Science was created in 1995, in part because of Bigelow's frustration with a lack of definitive results from the investigators who had accepted his financial support. NIDS had two primary focal points, UFOs and consciousness studies, more specifically whether human consciousness survives death. And he's still working on that. A world-class science advisory board was assembled, made up of academics, writers, former intelligence officials, and other professionals who'd spent years in the murky trenches of UFOlogy and other frontier science. The board had its first organized meeting in December 1995 in Las Vegas. A second meeting in January 1996 marked the first time most of the NIDS board was together in the same room. Among those in attendance was physicist Dr. Hal Puthoff, computer scientist and longtime UFO investigator and author Dr. Jacques Vallée, former astronaut and U.S. Senator Harrison Schmitt, Dr. John Mack of Harvard, former U.S. Army intelligence officer Dr. Alexander, and several other notables. Journalist George Knapp made a presentation to the board about the UFO files he'd obtained during a trip to the former USSR. This is clear back in 1995. I think you can see that Bob Bigelow has an intense interest with the paranormal. And when you talk about the paranormal, I mean, there's just so many different dozens of things you could be talking about. The problem that I see with this approach is, like I said, it's just throwing the kitchen sink at it. Instead of taking, you know, one single subject, cattle mutilation, or orbs, or whatever you want to look at, and looking intently at that thing, at narrowing down that one particular type of event, and then putting together some ideas about that. It says, Bigelow purchased, 1996, Bigelow purchases the Sherman Ranch in Utah because he heard a lot of strange things happen there, though there is little evidence for that aside from some stories. Note also the strange stuff starts with co-author at. Now, of course, we've all heard about Skinwalker Ranch. Recently, the History Channel's done a series on that, and it is very interesting. But you can see we have this very wealthy man who has this intense interest in the paranormal. So by 1996, he's investigating Skinwalker Ranch. And, you know, you might think, well, this is something that could interest a lot of people. Why not get some federal funding? I mean, we get federal funding for a lot of science research projects that most people would probably consider to be complete nonsense. So I don't find it to be that offensive that they got the $22 million. I mean, there's a lot more money than that wasted on a lot sillier things. It says in 1996, Nevada Senator Harry Reid attends a NIDS advisory meeting, and Colm Kellner becomes part of the NIDS permanent staff and goes on to study the now renamed Skinwalker Ranch. So that's a little sketchy. They've renamed the ranch to seem a little spooky. Of course, we all know about the Native American stories of skinwalkers, and you know, that's kind of like naming it the Werewolf Ranch or the Vampire Ranch. But you can see here, clear back in 1996, we have this connection between Bigelow and Harry Reid and even George Knapp. Now, it goes on to 2004. It says NIDS shuts down and releases a few reports about and the book Hunt for Skinwalker by Kellner and Kapp. So they put some money into it. They did some research. They found some interesting stuff. And George Knapp wrote a book, I think, that probably made a lot of money. It says, in 2007, Lacazzi is employed at the Department of Defense, Defense Intelligence Agency, DIA, Defense Warning Office. DWA is a rocket scientist specializing in missiles. In 2007, he reads Hunt for the Skinwalker, is intrigued. So you have this high IQ individual, no doubt he's a rocket scientist. He's employed by the Department of Defense, and this is back in 2007. He's reading Skinwalker Ranch. He has an interest in the paranormal. It says in 2007, Dr. James T. Lacazzi was an intelligence officer serving in the Defense Intelligence Agency, Defense Warning Office. He served a team leader for writing the... He served as team leader for writing the annual Missile Defense Threat Environment series, the secret level threat documents used by Missile Defense, MDA. Of course, that's something that we're all interested in. Goes on, says in 2007, Lacazzi uses official letterhead from his office to write a letter to Bigelow asking to visit Skinwalker Ranch. While at the ranch, he claims to see a tubular bell-like object in the kitchen of the office/dwelling units. No one else in the room sees the object. This is where we get into a little bit of the sketchy zone. He's using letterhead from his Pentagon office. You know, that implies that this is official. Doesn't look like it actually was official. So these are the sort of things that bother me a little bit, especially, now, I'm not saying Lukatsky, but especially when some of these fellows that do this sort of thing go on 10, 12, 15, 20 years later to become renowned personalities in the UFO community and parlay their former employment with the Department of Defense into a very lucrative new job. Now it says, after some internal discussion with his colleagues and superiors at DIA, Lukatsky decided to take the bull by the horns. On June 19, 2007, he wrote that bombshell letter on official DIA letterhead to Robert T. Bigelow, asking to visit his Utah ranch for the purpose of developing a strategy on how my office, DWO, can characterize the potential threat aspects of the phenomena encountered in your research efforts. That could be considered a stretch. How do the things happening at Skinwalker Ranch threaten the national security of the United States? In 2008, it says Lukatsky specifically writes the bid document for AASWAP in a way that a successful bid can be administrated by his department. The request for proposal is also left deliberately vague, mentioning mostly future advanced aerospace theories and concepts. This is what they get into in the video, that, you know, they report that he basically admitted to writing this thing to look like they were investigating threats to United States aerospace, when in fact they were mostly focused on ghosts and werewolves and skinwalkers. So it's kind of like, you know, this stuff's interesting, it's fun to investigate, let's take a look at this, but we can't get funding for it, so let's just go ahead and make this seem like it's a national security threat. Like I said, I'm not saying that that's illegal, I'm just saying it seems a little sketchy to me, my opinion. It says 2008, the proposal for AAWSAP said nothing about UFOs, UAPs, or other phenomena, though Lukatsky says that was what it was about, but then said it was also about the paranormal. Goes on again in 2008, Bigelow forms Bigelow Advanced Aerospace Services, this is BASS, B-A-A-S-S, to fulfill the AAWSAP contract. Colm Kellner is hired to run BASS from offices in Las Vegas and Skinwalker Ranch. Now, you know, you can say this has the appearance of a very rich individual who has an intense interest in the paranormal, forming a company for the sole purpose of having the government fund his hobby. That's what it looks like to a lot of people from the outside. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that can be the appearance to some people. It says Kellner's first hire in 2008. Kellner's first hire for BASS is a former naval aviator, Douglas Kurth, who informs Kellner about the Nimitz Tic Tac event. Now that's something we've all heard about. It's become very famous, and that's important to what happens later on. It says Lieutenant Colonel Douglas Kurth presented himself for interview at Bigelow Corporate Headquarters. Kurth had an impressive resume. He was quiet spoken, but exuded professionalism and efficiency. Within 10 minutes of the beginning of the interview, Keller knew he had Bass's second hire. Toward the end of the interview, Kurth dropped a bombshell. He explained that in his previous career, he had seen the commanding officer of the Red Devils, a Marine Corps FA-18C squadron that was part of the USS strike group Nimitz, southwest of San Diego in November and December of 2004. Kurth went on to describe in detail his participation in what has now become known as the Tic Tac event, arguably in 2021, the most famous UAP case in the world. You can see right there just the beginnings of how this whole thing was revealed, how the information was disseminated, and how that information was eventually, in my opinion, monetized. We're then told Kellner knew that this event, during which United States Navy Commander David Fravor had now famously seen and engaged with the unidentified object that later became known as Tic Tac, could be an important case to investigate for the fledgling BAA SS organization as a part of the AAWSAP contract. Kurth wrote up his recollection of the Tic Tac case and even produced a comprehensive list of eyewitnesses to contact, which Kellner submitted to Jim Lukatsky at DIA. Lukatsky, in turn, brought his friend Jonathan Axelrod on the case, and within months, Axelrod and his team had comprehensively interviewed and obtained detailed testimony from more than a dozen pilots, radar operators, and other witnesses from the USS Nimitz, USS Princeton, and other sources. That's great that they got all this information and that they got it documented, but the problem I have is the chain of custody with that information and the monetization of that information. I just think it would be so much better to have all this stuff displayed on a publicly available website where we could crowdsource the truth about UFOs, as opposed to having to wait around to be handed out the truth piecemeal by certain insiders. Now, I've got to finish up here because this is a long article, but it goes on. It says 2008 to 2010 ? Bass contracts with people like Hal Puthoff to create what would become the DIR files that have been released. You know, Hal Puthoff is another celebrity in this circle. Longtime insider, longtime employee. Some people might even say deep stater. I'm not saying that in a disparaging way, but these people obviously are connected at a very high level socially. They're connected with very intelligent scientists. Most of these guys are super bright as far as I can see, and they're connected with big money players like Bob Bigelow, and they're connected with very powerful political people like the late Harry Reid. So I think that does deserve some examination. It goes on, it says 2009, people like Axelrod had visited Skinwalker Ranch, seen weird stuff, and were experiencing the after effects of whatever happens there, following one home like a contagion, including bipedal wolves. Well, we've heard about that. These people having what they call hitchhikers, the hitchhiker effect. They go to these places, they witness this paranormal behavior. Oftentimes to me, it seems like it has a very evil bent. And then when they go home, they're still, it's almost like a haunting where they are harassed by these entities, or whatever you want to call them. It says, neither Axelrod or Wilson would make out anything definitive in the gloom, but as if in psychological agreement with what Costigan was seeing, they instinctively acknowledged that the source of their fear was 50 yards further down the track, and at that point, all three felt close to their breaking point, each one convinced that continuing toward the dark oval shape would lead to certain death. They're talking about, you know, seeing these things like bipedal wolves or skinwalkers, whatever. You know, you're getting into some high strangeness, not the sort of stuff that taxpayers really want to fund. And then it says 2009 at a dinner in D.C. was the first we hear about Louis Elizondo. Louis's a big player in this case. Further down the dinner table sat Louis Elizondo, it says. This is an excerpt from the book, of course, who worked collaboratively with Axelrod and was at the office of the Undersecretary of Defense for USDIA. So that places Elizondo at the DOD as employee of this USDI. Elizondo looked dapper with jet black hair and was considered a brilliant special agent and analyst with a lot of expertise on counterintelligence investigations. Little did anyone at the dinner table realize that 9 years later, Louis Elizondo would become a media star and a household name in global UAP investigations. As he enjoyed his steak tartare, Elizondo regaled those around him with some war stories, including one hair-raising exploit about how his advanced intuition and remote viewing capabilities had saved his life and the life of his men while on a covert combat mission in war-torn Afghanistan. Kind of gives you some insight into the personality of Louis Elizondo. Bigger than life. Claims he can remote view. Claims he saved the life of him and his men while leading a combat mission in Afghanistan. Just take that for what it's worth. In 2009, Senator Reid, featuring OSAP's incredible success, Senator Reid fearing that OSAP's incredible success would lead to it being exposed at the DOD and the and the prospect that the Russians and Chinese were already exploiting UAP tech, writes a letter to Deputy Secretary of Defense wherein ATIP is first used. Also note the assumption on the book, the assumption in the book that the Russians and or Chinese already are working on UAP tech. How or where they got it is not mentioned. So here we see the birth of ATIP, simply put out there by the late Senator Harry Reid because he's trying to get more funding past the original $22 million that he got. It's kind of like he's soft selling it. He knows no one's going to fund research on paranormal stuff. So he has to re-couch this whole thing as if they're funding research to aid with national security. Goes on and says, 2009, Bass paid MUFON for access to their database. Talks a little bit about that. And I want to get down here to 2010. It says, Bass constructs migration routes for bipedal dog-like creatures along with their occupying glowing orbs. So you can kind of see the funding's getting pretty crazy here. Really getting into some strange paranormal stuff. All interesting, but it's not really tied to the actual phenomena of just UFOs per se. It says 2011 to 2016, AAWSAP was only funded for 2009 to 2010. From 2011 onward, Lacatsky, along with Reid, tried different funding arrangements, including moving AAWSAP to the Department of Homeland Security. Eventually, Lacatsky retired as was AAWSAP. It's almost like this ghost organization hanging around unfunded for 5 years. It really makes you just think, wow, how inefficient is our government? So you had this thing. All we know for sure is that AAWSAP was funded for like, what, a year? And then for about 4 or 5 years, it hangs around as this ghost organization with no funding. And the former head of that AAWSAP, Lacatsky, along with the late Senator Harry Reid, are desperately trying to get more money to put into it, but they have no success. And then out of that is born ATIP, a completely made-up name. There never was a department specifically named ATIP. It was just a name that Harry Reid first used in order to kind of soft-sell the notion of funding OSAP. But Elizondo uses this whole notion that there might have been a actual department called ATIP, and he uses that as a launch pad for a career as a UFO expert. That's what it looks like, and that's what they're saying in the video, and that's what this fellow here is talking about, what he got from the book. We just don't know all the facts because we're not being told all the facts. But I think it's important to ask questions. And no personal vendetta here against any of these guys, but I think when these people sort of rise up out of these deep state departments and become the experts that reveal UFO knowledge to the masses, then it's important for us to go back and look at their credentials. Where do they come from? To ask questions. It's okay to do that. It's okay to exercise some critical thinking. So I found this article to be fascinating. I'll post it on the Buy Me a Coffee website. The video's over there. This stuff all came out about a year ago, but it really did not get the kind of media play that I think that it deserves, and it's definitely something that if you're interested in the UFO phenomenon, you got to take a look at this stuff. Until next time, this is UFO Warning, over and out.